the Saturday Light Brigade, and thank you for being with us. Peter, Paul, and Mary is the last song you heard, called Rolling Home, the song from 1967. Gosh, 45 years ago. Who knows where the time goes? And one guy who does is... I'm just excited when we have Steve. I want to begin joking around and laughing, and I've got a million things I feel like saying, but it's much more fun to just let Steve at least do the starting of the talking. I'll follow. You lead. I'll follow.
Okay.
It's a pleasure for us to welcome Steve Pellegrino.
Well, it was really interesting that a little boy just came in. I guess
Nico.
Nico is about five. And he was fascinated by an accordion. And you, when you think back, when we were kids, the accordion was what the electric guitar is now. You could get an accordion anywhere.
They don't have accordion hero out there to help.
No, they don't, but they have an accordion app on the iPad. They do. They have a button a version, and they have a keyboard version. It was probably the only reason I'd ever buy an iPad. I was fascinated. But it's such an interesting instrument because it's so portable. And in the, I'd say from the 20s through the 50s, Italy was turning out 200,000, 300,000 accordions a year. And there's a city in Italy that is the accordion city. It's called Castle di Fiardo. It's on the Aegean. And all it is accordion factories.
Wow.
And what's fascinating about it is a little history. The very beginnings of the accordion were invented by a Viennese guy, and he was traveling through Italy, and he stayed with the Soprani family. They were farmers, and they were so gracious and nice to him that he gave them one of his accordions. Now, it wasn't in the same form as we know, but it had bellows and reeds. Well, the Soprani family said, this is something really cool. And they started, the Sopranis built the first accordions as we know them. And from there it took off. And they say there's a resurgence of the accordion, but it's really sort of a subculture, and it's out there. I'm on an accordion website. And, you know, the medium age is at the older end. But there are a lot of young people that had jumped into it. And I hear great stories about guys who used to be able to, you know, run around with their accordion in these, you know, floor shows and all the crazy stuff they'd do. And in Europe, the accordionist is like the lead guitar player. The accordion is it. It's still it.
It's an instrument that I think would be, well... maybe easy to pick up, but hard to master.
One of the problems is that it's that idea of rubbing your stomach and patting your head at the same time. And I've been playing so long, it's really hard when I try to teach someone how to coordinate that. But it's fascinating because this accordion that I have is a full size. And so it has, for each note, there's 42 keys. For each note, there's four reeds. So that's like, 170-some so reeds.
So each key the keys that look like piano keys has four different reeds associated with it.
Okay, there's a bassoon reed, so I can play just the bassoon. And there's a piccolo reed. And then there are two clarinet reeds.
Huh.
And when you put them all together, you get the full sound. So you can combine these different ways. Like this is the organ sound, like, and they have one that's called the accordion sound. I don't really. It almost sounds like the master. And what's interesting, some accordions, this one isn't one of them, has what they call a double cassado. They take two sets of the reeds and put them in a box and aim them directly out, as opposed to the reeds here are all aimed in towards the bellow. And it gives you a fuller, larger sound. And another trick they used to do is they would tune the accordion a little sharp. Instead of the A being 442, you'd tune it to 443. That way it would stand out with the other instruments because a sharp sound, a higher sound.
Kind of like a xylophone or marimba in an orchestra kind of rises above everything else.
Yeah. Because in those days they weren't amplified, but now they have amplification. They have, this one is amplified, and I can put it through pedals, and have a lot of fun with it. The bass, though, is another interesting thing. This is called a Stradella bass system. So you have like the tonic note, which would be a C, and then right next to it would be the counter bass, would be a third, E, and then you have minor, major, seventh, and diminished seventh. And but you can still, you know, do scales.
Has anybody ever like figured out how many notes exist on an accordion? How many distinct notes? That's a math problem. it must be thousands.
Well, the choices in combinations, you know, it gets pretty crazy. This is another interesting thing. People might not know this, but accordions are covered. When you see a black or a red or a white accordion, that's celluloid. That's like film, like in the 35-millimeter. And what they do is they soak it in acetone and water, and it gets gummy and stretchy. Mm-hmm. Then they glue it on, and then it shrinks and tightens up, and then they cut the extra off.
That's it. You really want an airtight, watertight system inside of there,
I guess. And one of the other reasons they did it is because the wood that goes into an accordion has to be seasoned for 20, 30, 40 years. And they can't always get the same color wood together. So they wanted to mask the fact, you know, so it would look right. But there is some companies now that are building high-end accordions that don't have the celluloid on. And they match all the wood. But this is very interesting. In September... they have an accordion festival in Castle di Fiordo. And my dream is to go to the accordion festival.
Yeah, this is the land where all the accordions, I would imagine, you know, 90% of the accordions are manufactured in this particular, you know, area.
Yes, yes.
I guess Shenzhen in China is a big manufacturing area. I'm trying to think if all of the steel mills were in the Mon Valley running as they might have been in the mid-60s, the 9 or 10 U.S. steel mills.
Right.
Imagine all of these accordions. Imagine driving down a Pittsburgh, you know, valley, and all there are accordion, you know, shops.
Well, you know, my dream is, you know, you get these catalogs that have all these guitars in, and my dream is to someday open a catalog that has that many accordions in it, or walk into a store, instead of, you know, guitars on the wall, there'd be accordions everywhere. So I try to hit all the accordion stores that I can. There's an interesting one in San Francisco called the Accordion Apocalypse, and then there's an accordion store called Alex's in New York City, and then there's one in Detroit called Castiglione. And it's great because I can call them up and say, look, I'm going to be in town. Can I come and look? And they open their doors to me.
It's got to be like a family member or, you know, when somebody comes in that's enthusiastic. I'm still picturing this manufacturing district, you know, with like smokestacks, with like musical notes coming out of them. Big trucks of lacquer coming in. And, like off-spec keys that are being sent to be recycled, and just this whole, and then all of the subsidiary industries that come into, you know, in Pittsburgh, you know, you have all these machine shops and tool and die companies. So making all the parts, and we'd have a whole economy based on the accordion.
Yeah. And it's sort of interesting because, you know, since the market fell, now what basically is happening in Italy is it's all higher end instruments, and the Chinese have taken over on these, the lower end. And the sad thing is they've been buying Italian companies, so people think they're getting an Italian accordion, and because they put plastic parts in and stuff. And it's, but as the Italian said, once these Chinese players start to get better, they're going to want a good instrument, so they'll come to us.
And is an old accordion often an incredible find?
Yes.
Much like any other musical instruments, if it's been taken care of. Is there a Stradivarius of accordions?
Yes, Excelsior.
Excelsior.
I have a 1958 Symphony Artist Double Cassato Excelsior accordion, and it's beyond words. You know what? You know, when you take an instrument up and you play like a really good guitar or a very good violin, you just go, oh my God. And that was the heyday of instruments. Like, there's a famous player, Magnante, and it was his instrument. And it's interesting because I'm an old 45 with the picture of my accordion on with Magnante. Huh. So it's very interesting because this is a Titano. And the Defner family, Mr. Defner, had these built. And his wife still runs the company. And they were trying to be forward-thinking, and they wanted to try to get the rock market. And so these instruments are designed to be lighter, and they really work real well playing like sort of non-traditional accordion music.
Hmm. You know?
And it was interesting. I got to meet her. I went to Mineola, New York City, when I got this accordion, and it was great. They brought me in. Here's the accordions. Test them out.
I love it. I love it.
So,
wow.
There's quite an organization of people out there that love the accordion.
This is Steve Pellegrino. Are you wondering when we're going to stop talking about the accordion and let them play it? Well, in 20 minutes, Steve's first song. No, we should probably let him. It's 28 before noon.
Okay. We had too much fun.
No, we could keep talking. We're going to talk some more.
Well, I have a song that I'd like to play. This is called The Plaster's Blues. And
you are a plasterer.
Yes, and it's really weird because when you're younger, you think, why would anybody ever retire?
You know, when you play this song, there's not a drywall in the house.
Where's the drum? But I'm bump.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's fine.
When you were younger.
Well, when you're younger, you figure, well, you know, I could do this forever. But as you get older, it's a combination of, you know, after 40 years of doing something, you pretty much got it down. And then your body just says, well, I don't know about that ceiling. So this is just sort of a lament about, you know, being it's sort of the plasters.
And this is plaster, not drywall.
No, this is the real deal.
And I'm pointing that out. We have plaster walls, and Tom Dean is a guy that does plaster work for us. Guys that know how to do plaster are fewer and further between. Guys that really know.
There are probably less plasters than accordion players.
And in Italy, there's this one district where all the plaster come. No, that's another.
Well, there's a lot of good plasters in Italy, too. Under a gypsum sky, you know my days are numbered. The young ones tick me off, I'm jealous of their youth. Still my days are numbered. You know I love the work, it's always in my blood. Still my days are numbered. But someday they will learn and see their days are numbered. You know.
work. It's always in my blood, but the thrill is gone. Hope to make it, hope to make it, hope to make it to the end with dignity.
I like it.
It's interesting. The gypsum is what plaster's made
out
of. And so one of the hardest jobs to do as a plaster is a ceiling because it's over your head. So I call it the gypsum, you know, after 30 years under
the gypsum sky. I didn't think about that.
I love – is that alliteration? I don't know. Metaphor.
I think it's a metaphor.
Metaphor. So excuse me. I've had this cold for the last couple of weeks. I just – don't seem to be able to shake.
Yeah,
and the weather's not very helpful.
A listener this morning was mentioning that same thing, a long cold. Gypsum is, it's a byproduct of, I think, a clean coal technology. I mean, there's a lot of gypsum plants, I think.
They mine it.
It's,
and Canada is one of the big places they mine gypsum. And it's interesting that somehow along the line people discovered that if you take this stuff, crush it up, put water with it, it hardens up again.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because when you think back to, you know, this things like the Sistine Chapel and this plaster's still there.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, the ancient Egyptians, the first kinds of plaster they used is they took lime. And what would they do? They would do is they would mix water with the lime, and then you'd put layer upon layer. And it would take forever to harden, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere along the line, they discovered that if you mixed the lime with the gypsum, it would dry, you know, in a reasonable amount of time that you could work with it.
And you get heat from the water, too, right?
Yeah,
and
lots of heat. It's a chemical reaction.
Yeah, and I know from messing around just a little bit with plaster, it really takes somebody who knows what they're doing, but it's amazing how much heat that liberates. You just don't expect it to happen.
Yeah, and it's a base as opposed to an acid, so it does burn.
Yeah.
And so you have to be very careful. I always wear gloves and glasses. Because you can burn your eye pretty bad.
What's plaster of Paris? Is that the same?
Plaster of Paris is just without anything else. I think it's basically what they call molding plaster. It's a harder material. It's what they make cornices out of and medallions. Regular plaster that you mix with lime for a wall is called gauging. I'm not really sure the chemical makeup, but it's great stuff, boy.
I'm going to ask you a question that I can't believe is going to come out of my mouth, but I'm going to ask it. I've already been through it in my head enough times. I wonder, you know, if somebody parties a little bit too much, they've said that the person is plastered. Do you have any idea where that expression came from?
Boy, I wish I knew. That I have no idea.
I mean, I wonder if it means... you know, hardened to the point of not being able to be responsive or...
Because you're brittle. Your brain is brittle.
Yeah. I never thought about that until just now. And it makes me want to figure that out.
Yeah, I'm going to try to look that up myself. I never thought of it either, what the derivation was. I love etymology. There used to be a long time ago on NPR, there was a guy that would take words and trace them.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to find out, you know, how these words came about. And
I'm gonna try to quietly, or maybe Ricky can look too, but quietly look and see if I can, while you're playing another song, see if I can figure out what the etymology is. And as long as it's gentle and Saturday Light Brigade appropriate, I'll share it. If it's not, I'll let you know.
Keep it under your hat. Well, I meant to tell you, last spring I did a show called An Accordion Stories.
Yes. We talked about that and tried our best to promote it.
And it was very interesting because I was part of the accordion pool party at Lawrenceville.
Right.
And when they started to talk to me, I realized, you know, you have those 6 degrees of separation with Kevin Bacon. I realized that there was – my whole life had things to do with accordions. and all these discoveries about family members that played the accordion. And so it was very interesting because I was able to be at the age where I could tell a long hour and a half show about my family heritage and all the interesting characters that this is a very interesting. I had a great-grandfather who played the accordion, and I'd always heard that he and my father were very close. Now, he was my mother's grandfather, so it seemed odd that my father was so close to this in-law.
And they would, yeah, they would have met each other later in life.
Right. And I realized why they were so close. My father played the accordion. Well, it turns out that one weekend, this great-grandfather who played the accordion went out to play a wedding. And these Italian weddings would go all weekend. Well, he failed to mention to his wife that he was not going to show up till like late Sunday night. And when he did, I guess he was pretty shot from all the wedding partying. And she says, "You look tired. Why don't you go lay down?" And when he went to sleep, she took his accordion out back with a hatchet and chopped it off.
Oh my gosh.
So I think
oh my gosh.
I think he loved being around my father because he could vicariously once again be around an accordion.
Oh gosh, that's rage.
That's something. You know, and it's really interesting because the three major food groups for a musician is, you know, the gig. Mm-hmm. You know, alcoholic beverages and free food. And so, and if you have a real musician and you're around them, this is what they live for.
And there's a couch.
There's a couch.
Okay.
So the interesting thing is, when you know real musicians, nothing else matters. And so for this guy to go play, he just would not think, well, maybe I should get home early because my wife will be worried. No. I'm playing the accordion, and everybody's having a good time. So
it's very delightful if that's all. I mean, really, it's childlike to get that much joy out of those three things. And I guess maybe it becomes less childlike if somebody's depending on you or doesn't know.
Yeah, because let's face it, in those days, you had a real job. You'd go play these things. It wasn't like you know, as a real, or you know, most people, it was not a real profession. But basically, the biggest thing was you wanted to play. I have a tune I'd like to play for you. I wrote this. It's called the Funky Polka. So I took the polka form, and I sort of funkified it.
Ah.
Thank you.
like that. That song needs words. I don't know if you're singing words to it as you're playing it.
Or... I'm trying to concentrate on what I'm doing.
I'm playing my accordion right now. Da, 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 da,
well, you don't have to put the lyric together.
Yeah,
we'll do
could
it.
Work on that. Andy Collier, who's engineering and is new to our staff, said he looked on his phone real quickly, plastered. That has to do with because there's this distinct smell to plaster and a distinct smell to someone who is plastered. Wow. And then I looked at a whole bunch of websites, and it's really a mystery. If you're just joining us, we're trying to figure out why plastered can mean more than just a wall that has had gypsum-based material applied to it. And they also say that to plaster somebody can mean to punch them or hit them, and that somebody who maybe partied a little bit too much might have that same appearance. But there's really no – they all sound like people going way out on a limb. But one website I really like said, now look, you know, why pick on plaster? Why – you don't say – with the exception of shellacked, you don't say that a person's been painted or landscaped
or carpentered,
or carpentered, and you say like the Bucks shellacked the New York, well, more likely the New York Mets shellacked the Pirates today, but you don't say things like wall to wall carpeted or mowed.
Yeah.
I guess you say mowed sometimes, mowed over. But
there was a thing as a kid I used to hear about called a mustard plaster.
Oh, yeah, plaster on your chest, yeah.
And I thought they also put it on your back, too. It must have heated up, and
must
have been because of the heating element of plaster.
You're right. They would make a...
like a poultice.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I was trying to think of the word. It's poultice, you're right. And put that on your chest, or back. To try to get whatever was ailing you. Maybe that's what you need for your nose and what I need for my throat right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But Steve, are you playing out anywhere? Or?
Well, this is interesting. I put a really interesting band together, and we were just trying to get it together. I have a saxophone, bass, and drums, and we're trying to do sort of a bunch of original tunes I'm writing that have to do with time. And because I'm working on a large project with water clocks and a string quartet, and
what's a water clock?
The original clock in on this planet was a water clock, and what they did, it was called a clepsydra, and what they would do is make a sort of a column of water, and something would float on it, and as it sunk, time would pass. And then later on, that's how the hourglass with the sand was.
Huh.
So I wanted, I'm trying to come up with I'm doing a show that has water clocks that act as the percussion. And the string quartet that plays with it has to use that as their conductor.
As their metronome
their
or
metronome
conductor.
Conductor.
Interesting.
And well, it's very interesting because they have to be built on towers. And Tim Cullen, who has a sculpture up here,
Tim's a great artist.
Because he has no limit to size.
Well, we have one of Tim's pieces of work in our house, which was made out of an old manhole cover.
He says basically when I have to transport my artwork, I need a tow truck or a semi. So he's going to do that. And I have some other friends who are going to help me build certain things. And then I have another friend that does sound, Frank Ferrar, who I'm going to ask to, figure out how we're going to, mic these things.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an interesting project because time basically has just – been codified by man. Man decided what a second was, a minute was. But it is interesting that like around the equator, a day is 12 hours long. And somehow that, because I guess all cultures kind of started in a very warm climate, everything's based on that 12 hour, and that it was only in the Industrial Revolution that people quit working. For a while before the Industrial Revolution, people didn't work 12 hours, or they worked till the sun went down. And it was only with the invention of the light bulb that it became into, you know, in the Industrial Revolution that people started to work three shifts, eight-hour shifts. Because I think they've discovered that 8 hours is a pretty good length of time for people to keep their attention. After that, I think you pretty much you get burnt out.
It's time is so arbitrary. And, you know, we have times, you know, when I was growing up, it took a day and a half to get to Kennywood. Now it takes 5 minutes, you know, and
that's really good.
You know, and if you're with somebody whose company you really enjoy, you know, it seems like just this hour, for example, we still got a little time left, but it's gone really fast.
No, it is amazing.
And it's incredible. I know there are days when you talk about work where I feel like there's days when I can get 20 hours worth of work done in eight, and there's days when I'm further behind than when I started. And it's not just whether you feel like you did good work or not, it's just whether you're in the zone or in the groove. I mean, so your Plaster's Blues is a great song for time because it talks about the amount of time.
Well, you know, Larry, we're both out of our teenage years.
Yes, yes. I just turned 40-10 recently.
So what's interesting about it is when you're younger, your sense of time is so different than as you get older, because at this point you're sort of looking closer at the end of things than the beginning of things. And because I have two sons, I think my oldest one's 25 and the youngest is like 22 or 23. And it's so fascinating to see how different the world is for them and what they see, what is their benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting that you brought up the day when you would drive up the Mon Valley, because when I went to Kennywood, you would see every single mill in that valley.
Yeah.
And how my children never experienced that. So for them, it's a story. It's not the reality.
Yeah. I was thinking the other day about coming out of the Squirrel Hill tunnels towards downtown Pittsburgh and seeing the Hazelwood plant with its belching, smoking, flaming, you know, the J&L plant there, and how archaic that sounds. If you try to tell somebody that story today, the notion that there would be this really industrial plant where you now see, you know, a chrome and glass and shiny, you know, development beyond which is a clean-ish river. And it's just incredible to think that was in my lifetime. My gosh. And it really makes you appreciate people older than you that can tell you stories that were even more vibrant.
I mean, when you see the old pictures of like downtown Pittsburgh being industrial and that they were mining coal under the Mount Washington, what do you call it? The train. What's that called? The cable car that goes
Yeah,
up.
The incline.
Incline. And,
when you see what the city looked like.
Yeah, this brought up something, because I don't know about you, but as a kid, Saturday night, you know, your parents might take you out for ice cream at Isley's.
Yeah, and then you watch the fireworks.
Well, what we would do is go down towards the Nora where they would dump the slag, and it was like a volcano. And you'd sit on the side of the road, there'd be 10 or 15 cars, and we'd watch them dump this. It was a threat. And I remember as one of the – especially when we went through Claret, and you'd see that 20-foot flame up in the air where the coke works are, which are still there, where they bake the coal.
The other thing, and this is very true, and I actually remember John Comtois when I was about 9 years old, one of my best friends in school. Once we were near a construction site walking home from school, and John turned to me. John's really bright, really interesting kid. I believe he is a naval officer now with a PhD.
Wow.
We walked by this construction site, and there was a piece of diesel equipment there. And John said, it smells like Kennywood here. And he's 8 years old. And he's right. Many of those rods run on diesel. There's a characteristic smell. And, you know, it smells like the smell of a Coke plant. It can bring back incredible memories of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, every now and then the Coke plant near where we live will have a bad push or something. And it's like, wow, that reminds me of, like, when I was 5 years old growing up here. It's amazing.
Well, I live close enough to a Coke plant in Denora that the women, when they had their washout, had to know when they were going to quench the Coke because all those particles fly up and it'll land on the clothes. So you'd see all the women run out and grabbing clothes and stuff. I was pretty small for that because Denora is where they had the big air inversion.
Right.
And so she would keep us in if it looked like really, you know, overkill.
Speaking of time, I can't believe it. We have 2.5 minutes of radio time left.
We talked our way through again.
First, I want to thank you for being here.
Oh, no, Larry, it's always
a pleasure.
How can
people reach you? A website or anything?
Yeah,
or?
I have an interesting website, www.accordionanarchy.com.
Perfect, accordionanarchy.com. So there you can find out when the time-based concert is going to happen and other things. I'd love to get you to, if you can, to close us out as we head towards this noon here. And also to thank you for being here. I wish we had more and more time. We have to have you back.
No problem. This is a Thelonious Monk song that I really like. It's called Straight No Chase.
That's a great song. Steve Pellegrino. And thanks for being with us today.
Sure.